Dr. Danielle Dragon, and I am a recovering perfectionist. So this is near and dear to my heart. I'm going to start with a little bit of basic neuroscience, basic brain science, that hopefully could be helpful for all of us. So Hashem created the brain in such a spectacular way. Generally speaking, the brain, as we move from the back of the brain to the front of the brain, our skills become more sophisticated. Towards the front of the brain is most sophisticated, towards the back, least cognitively sophisticated. And I'd like for everyone to consider thinking about the brain in sort of three major sections. Obviously, the brain is much more complex than three major sections, but we're going to compartmentalize it like that for the sake of this conversation. So the back of the brain is in charge of unconscious processes like digestion and breathing. So everyone here right now hopefully is not saying to yourself, please breathe now. That is just happening.
Except for us. We are
right. I am saying that
breathe.
To myself.
Yes. We're saying that.
Yeah. So, but in general, those functions are going to work continuously and unconsciously. Contrasting that with the front part of the brain, and Shira might talk about that a little bit more later. I have a feeling. The front part of the brain is our most sophisticated functions. These are things like problem solving, critical thinking, planning, organizing, compassion, developing relationships. When you think of yourself being in like an intentional space, that's the front part of the brain. And then we have this little part on the side, which houses something called the amygdala, which is known as our emotional center of our brain. And it's really the part of the brain that's awakened during times of high stress and emergencies. Now, it's an incredibly important part of the brain that is utilized in emergencies. So if a person encounters something quite dangerous, that part of the brain turns on and is working at sort of high capacity, but thereby it shuts off sort of the other parts of the brain, and they're no longer working at their highest capacity. So if you encounter a bear in the forest, for instance, that part of the brain will wake up. The front part of the brain is not working. You're not like, you know what, the bear is approximately 30 feet from me, and therefore I have 14 seconds to... No, that's not what happens. You really have a few choices in that moment. Very quickly, it happens automatically, and you're like, I will play dead. I will run from the bear, or I will fight the bear. Those are sort of the choices. There's one more choice that we'll talk about in a moment. But so that part of the brain is so useful in high-stress situations to ultimately protect us. But as useful as that part of the brain is, it is not nuanced. It is really, really not nuanced. And the way that that part of the brain thinks, so-called thinks, is in extremes. Things are either good and safe or bad and dangerous. Things are either successful or a failure. Things are all good or all bad. That's how that part of the brain operates. So we're coming into Pesach, and a few of us might be encountering high stress, right? And so I just think it's like important to know this about yourself, and really that if anyone who has a brain, this will happen, it's automatic, is that when your brain gets to a place where it's in a high stress situation, the brain goes, we are now experiencing an emergency. And that part of the brain, that black and white part of the brain, turns on. And so therefore, in high stress experiences that the brain is sort of identifying as an emergency, we will no longer look at things in a nuanced way. We will categorize them. And that's where perfectionism, I think, is linked to the brain. This part of the brain, that amygdala, that emotional control center, it's much more simplistic to think about things as safe and good or perfect or bad and terrible or disastrous. It takes a lot more cognitive energy to think about things in a much more nuanced way. So this is just like a relationship I think we should know about as we go into a stressful time. High stress leads that part of the brain to turn on that's going to see things as all good or all bad, leading many of us to sort of engage that desire to see things as perfect or disastrous, and it shuts off the front part of the brain that's going to see things with a lot more nuance and gray. Does that part make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yes? Good. Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you. It's helping me. Okay. I'm just going to give you like a little snack here on perfectionism, because like we could really talk about this for a long time. So I mentioned that when that part of the brain turns on, it brings us into what we call like the fight, flight, freeze mode. People have heard of fight, flight, freeze, right? Like fighting would be if a person's encountering an emergency and their propensity is to be like aggressive or physically fight something or yell. I'm a fleer by nature. In emergencies, I like to run out. I had a patient once when I worked at a therapeutic day school, and he had a freeze response when he was dropped off. He had an attachment challenge when he was dropped off, and he would leave his mother. He would go to his desk, and he would pass out for 20 minutes. His body would just totally freeze and fall asleep. And that's how he managed what his brain registered as an emergency situation. Okay, so we've got fight, flight, and freeze. So there's a fourth one, and it's less known, but it's definitely something that exists. It's considered one of those automatic behaviors, and it's called fawn. Has anybody heard of this before? Okay, so fawning is the idea that when that part of the brain turns on, where we're in a high stress environment, we're acting from our amygdala. Fawning is described as this tendency very much linked to perfectionism and people-pleasing. And I'll do this particular thing perfectly. I'll appease you. I'll do whatever I can so that I can gain a sense of connection, avoid pain, avoid punishment. So that's the idea of fawning. Again, it's very automatic, and it's considered one of what we call the four Fs. And I'll do anything, I'll do this thing perfectly just to appease you. So what I wanted us to just think about, again, this is just like a little snack on perfectionism, is that some of us that come from histories where, for whatever reason, we maybe grew up in a situation where there was very high expectations, maybe a high level of criticism, maybe just by nature, we're kind of perfectionistic. But there are people, especially people that fall into that fawning category, that want to people please, really want to do well, came from histories where that was the expectation. They people pleased, and that was received with maybe like attention or praise or security. So I find that those people have a bit of a warped sense of a continuum from behavior that I would say is like failure, bad, problematic, to that continuum all the way to perfect behavior. So if we think of that true continuum, we have like failure over here, and then like okay behavior, pretty good behavior, good enough behavior, great behavior, ideal perfect behavior, right? It's a full continuum. But there are people, and I'm sure some of you could relate to this, where there are really two parts of the continuum in that sense. They have perfect behavior, which is ideal behavior, and that's associated with feelings like relief and adequacy. And then there's good enough behavior, which is associated with feelings like disappointment and inadequacy. And true failure or disappointment isn't even on the continuum. So like I said, there's these people that have perfect behavior, what they're always striving for. And when they hit that perfect behavior, it's not met with a sense of celebration. It's like, whew, okay, check that off my list. It's not met with jubilation. It's not met with excitement. But the reality is you do something perfectly. Shouldn't that be met with, like, joy? But for many people, that's met with a sense of, like, relief and adequacy. And good enough behavior is met with a sense of failure. And so I would just challenge everybody to be curious about, like, what does your continuum look like? Are you a person that when you meet ideal behavior, are you really, like, celebrating that? Or is that just met with a sense of like, well, I should have done that, which is often like training that maybe happens in childhood, that sort of association between high achieving perfectionism. And so as we're in this season that's associated with a lot of striving, you know, ideal behavior, ideal cleaning, all of these ideals, I would just challenge everybody to check in with their continuum And when you meet an ideal, what's your emotional response? When you do something good enough, what's your emotional response? And I would really challenge all of us to... really, it's okay. I'm glad you're here. To exercise compassion for yourselves when you are doing good enough behavior. And when you occasionally meet behavior that's perfect or ideal, certainly that's cause for celebration as opposed to simply feelings of relief. Let's also keep in mind what I spoke about previously, that natural brain tendency. And if we can work to keep ourselves in like low to moderate stress as opposed to high stress, we can avoid slipping into that amygdala state that's going to push our brain into that black and white thinking and push us towards wanting to just experience the world as perfect or a failure. That's all for now. Thank you.
Do you want to go? You want me to go? Okay.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate very much, Dr. Dragon.
Was that timing good?
It was spot on.
Okay, great.
Oh, shit, of course. 1 minute short. Shoot. Okay, guys. I'm a little bit different than Dr. Dragon, but we're all good. No, I'm joking. Yeah. I didn't say that. I actually wrote some notes on myself. I'm so proud. Okay, I'm going to stand up because I like to see people's faces. Oh, my God. Hi. I'm so happy you're here. Okay. I like to see people's faces just because that's my personality. So, I want to start off by saying that what I'm going to talk about, I feel actually applies to every age because I know some people are younger here and have young kids. Some people might be my age and we have 17-year-olds and grandchildren. Some people might have other kids out. Everyone kind of falls in the middle. And I believe that what we're talking about is actually more about for us than it is for our kids. So I'm using the lens of the kids to really talk about what I feel like really applies to all of us, which will then go on to our children. So the first, there's a couple key kind of statements I just want to make and kind of say we're going to accept those. The first, Yontif is hard. Period. It's not supposed to be easy. It's supposed to be meaningful. It's supposed to be stressful. There are supposed to be moments that you want to crawl under your table and cry. And then there are supposed to be moments that you want to dance around your house because guess what? You did it. Right? So to remember that it's totally appropriate to have all those emotions. The second thing is that we are all different people and approach Yontif in a completely different way. So what I'm going to say and talk about today is for everybody to find it through their own sense of who they are and their personality and the things like perfectionism. I am not one. I sometimes wish I was, but I'm not. But I do it my way, right? Like everyone should do it that way. So when whatever I say, I really want you guys to try to internalize it through your own lens. And when we have questions or after, if it doesn't make sense, feel free to find me and we can talk it all through. And the third thing I want to say is to go back to our roots of why we actually have Shabbos and Yontif. Pesach, Shabbos, Yontif, all of it. Why do we have it? It's not for stress purposes, right? Although maybe they're part of, we all grow from it, so I guess maybe a little bit. But we really have it because it's our heritage. And it's what we're giving our children. And it's how we're connecting to Hashem. And it's how we're bringing meaning into our life. And it's how we're telling our kids, wow, look at how lucky we are for what we have. And it's time that we are together with our families. And it's times that we fight and we laugh. And then when we sit back, because my kids are a little bit older and they sit around the table and hear all these crazy things that went on. Some of them I think I don't remember, but they bring them all up, right? It's all of that plus so much more. But the foundation of it is we are giving our children the gift of what we grew up with, which is our Torah and our Mesorah. So when we look at it through that lens, right, and 5-1, anyone disagree with those three statements? Yontif is hard, we have our own selves, and our goal is to give it over to our children through Torah Mesorah? Okay. Feel free to disagree. I'd love a good argument.
Later.
Okay. Keep them going. But if you look at it through that lens, right, then when you're approaching Yontif, what's the most important thing about Yontif? Okay, you guys aren't going to answer. I see this.
Making it an experience for your kids.
Making an experience. It's more about the energy and the feeling and how you're showing up to your kids and saying, I have this big thing here that's so important in the world, which is everything about Judaism and Torah and Hashem. And, oh my God, it's coming. I hate this time. I hate the cleaning. You go do that and you go do that. And what's the message the kids are getting, right? Now, again, we're all human, and parenting, 95% good enough parenting is actually perfect parenting. There is no such thing as perfect parenting. When you stress your kids out and you help them work through it, you've actually given them resilience and grit. So every time in your head as I talk and you remember the thing you did wrong, pat yourself on the back and say you taught your kids resilience and grit, okay? Within a normal range, obviously, but we're just going with normal. So remember that. But if you could show up to your kids and say, guess what, guys? Pesach is coming. It's time to spring clean, right? And you make it fun for them, or you put on music, or you jammed, or you think of something ridiculous that you're going to do special this year for Yontif, then it gives them a feeling of like, wow, I'm so lucky to be Jewish. I'm so lucky to have a family that's going to celebrate this all together. I'm so lucky that I have to clean. I'm so lucky, right? So I'll give you a couple examples that happens in my house to try to make it. But before I go that, as someone who specializes in behavioral kids and have had many of my own behavioral kids, it is really important that the thing that we give the child the task for is something that they actually want to do and goes along with their personality type, right? So I had a kid when he was a little bit younger. He loved to spray things. That was like his favorite thing. He didn't care what he sprayed, what was in the spray. He just wanted to spray. So guess what? He cleaned my windows 1,000 times. Now, I didn't need my windows cleaned once. I didn't. I for sure did not need them 1,000 times. I did not need the water on the floor, the roll of paper towels that got bigger and bigger. Ooh, he's spraying his sister. But what he did do was he participated in Pesach cleaning through his way with the music on, and he had a blast. Right? So some of the things we did is when we had to clean all of our toys, we threw them in the bath with lots of bubbles. Lots of bubbles. They cleaned all the toys 1,000 times, lots of bubbles. Did they need to clean the toys with bubbles that way? We can all argue the halachos of if you have to actually clean your toys, whatever, later. But it made it fun for them. They were part of the Pesach cleaning. We do something called the chametz table. We clean out our pantry and everything that's half used. We don't actually keep real chametz over Pesach, but anything that's half used, we put on a table. And we put a sign by the table that says, L'shei mitzvah spear chametz. And every time they take something off their table, it's their favorite time from like 2 weeks before Purim till Pesach. They can eat whatever on that table, obviously within reason, you have to know your own kids. But they have to say, L'shei mitzvah spear chametz. So guess what? It's their favorite time of year because they can eat junk. I mean, I let my kids eat junk in general, but it's always there, right? So they walk around and they see it. We, for me, I'll share with you personally, I was finding Yontif kind of really boring. You know, how many times can you make Pesach? I know it's all spiritual and great, I just said that, but now I'm being a practical human. And it was not exciting for me anymore. And it felt like a lot of work. So I decided to do something that was fun for me and include them. So last year, I made vases with all the makos for my flowers. But the kids helped me do them because it was what was fun for me, so then it was fun for them. The idea is understanding that it's not about the food you serve. It's not about the perfect table. It's about what are they going to walk away from and remember? Are they going to walk away with remembering the energy and the positivity? And I can go through every Yontif and tell you different things. And that you let them set the table or learn how to fold a napkin a certain way, or they want to choose the decor, whatever that means, however you're going to do your decor, or they want to try a new recipe, or they want to make their perfect cake, or they want to make their pavlova that completely falls apart, or mom, I want to make the meatballs, and some are big, and some are small, right? Whatever it is, you're letting them do it, and yes, you sit at your table, and you're like, well, those meatballs are really kind of funny shaped, but we're like, everyone, thank God, look, Naftali made the meatballs, he's amazing, and then he has pride, and I have a good laugh, which is important, and my husband and I have a smile together because he was our hardest kid and now he's making meatballs for Yontif. I'm so happy because I've manipulated all my kids to help. They don't even realize, right? And now when you talk to them as adults, they don't remember a lot of what we did, but they all love Yontif. So the key is to remember what really is the priority. And when you're going to take something on yourself and you decide you want to do something, ask yourself, is this meeting the goals and the intention of what Yontif and Shabbos is meant to be? And if the answer is no, then how do you fix that? And if you are a perfectionist and you need things to be perfect, then simplify, simplify, simplify. Because your child isn't going to remember that you served 3 kugels, 2 salads, and 5 meats, but they will remember if you were annoyed in the kitchen and you told them to get out and you sat at the Pesach table. Okay, we're here. Kaddish. Right? Like, they remember that. That's what they remember. So think about what you're trying to give over to your children and remember to make it fun, however fun is for them, and every family does fun. We're a little crazy in the Valensky house, so our fun sometimes is a little bit different than everybody. You're laughing. You see what goes on in my house. Everybody's fun is a little different, right? But your kids only expect it to be your way. They don't expect it to be anybody else's way. And the way that it's genuinely given over is if it's fun for you and meaningful for you. So if you're realizing that you're facing going into Yontif with already that dread and that yuck feeling, ask yourself why. And do whatever you need to get out of that, whether that's finding a friend and coming up with some creative idea, whether it's trying a new recipe, if that's what it is, whether it's cutting down on some of the things you were going to do. Ladies, I had to clean my house once in 24 hours for Pesach for someone. Okay? It was a last minute decision. I called a Rav and I said to the Rav, I have 24 hours. What do I actually have to do? To tell you that I was shocked. I kept questioning him. You mean I don't have to wash all the costumes? Wait, you mean I don't have to dump out every toy and vacuum? Okay, I learned a lot that year. But think about, what are you really doing when it comes to cleaning, right? Are you really doing it? Do you have to get new bins? Some people, girls, like new bins, and then they like to write on the bins. Or get a label maker, and they like to put labels on everything. That's their Pesach help. You know what I'm saying? Like, they like it. It looks beautiful. So the point is, the three takeaways, because I'm not as efficient at time as she is. So the three takeaways are, remember that if Yontif isn't fun for you or doesn't feel good for you, it is not going to be good and fun for your kids. And so it's important for you to understand why it isn't. And out of that why, what can be changed and what cannot be changed. It's a 3-day Yontif. There's nothing we can do about it. There's lots of meals. There's nothing we could do about it. Food needs to be cooked. There's nothing we can do about that. But I like to try random recipes. That's how I stay interested. My husband doesn't understand it because I'm always like, oh my God, what if it's bad? But I always do it because I don't want to cook the same meat again, right? But that's my personality. Everyone has to find their own way. The second thing is, remember the intention. What are you trying to give over to your kids? What is Shabbos and Yontif about? They are not going to remember anything you cooked. They will have their favorite recipes, but they will not remember it. But they will remember how you made them feel Erev Yontif. And the third is, every child needs their own joy or fun about cleaning in their own way. So if your child likes to cook, it's like a Mitzrayim, right? They used to give the men, the women had to carry the heavy things. The men had to do, I'm about to sound really unintelligent here. The men had to do, carry the right? The women had to carry the heavy, help me out here, guys. Come on. The men had to get the thank you. I'm like, you have a gal. See, I'm connecting. I can't talk Torah and, yeah, we're in this together. But anyway, the point is, don't give your child that you know is not going to be able to do a task, something that they can't do. My kids who have ADHD, they empty the pantry. And then they schlep the bins up and down because they're not going to sit and bake a cake. They're not going to sit and help me scrub. Unless they can pour a lot of stuff all over it and make a big mess, right?
Might feel nice.
Right. Yeah. But I'm just saying, like, give them things that applies to them. And overall, just remember, it's a gift to have Yontif. It's a gift to have children. It's a gift to have the energy to do it. And when we remember all of that, we walk into Yontif with such a feeling of excitement and love and connection to Hashem that it really does flow into your kids about how cool it is to be Jewish. And, you know, my last thought is, a lot of people tell me all the time that they don't want to parent kids in certain ways because they're afraid they're going to go off the derech. There's a huge fear of everyone's afraid of, if I tell my child no, they're going to go off the derech. If your children feel lucky to be Jewish and your children feel excited about Yontif and they feel that it's amazing, they are not going to want to leave being Jewish. They will only want to leave it if it feels like it's problematic and it's hard for them and it's a drain on the family and it's the worst thing that could possibly be. So on that note, I wish you all an amazing Yontif. I am happy to share some of our crazy things that we do at our house because they're just dumb fun. And that was it. Thank you.
Thank you very much,
Amiva.
Really appreciate that.
Okay. Good evening, everyone. Nice to see you all. So nice to see some good old friends, and nice to meet some new ones, too. Be in the presence of the esteemed colleagues of mine over here is a big treat. I'm going to piggyback off of some of what was said and then digress into some details. The word perfectionism has been used a lot. I just want to point out that as Jews, we recognize that perfectionism is not possible for the human being. Hashkafically, Hashem created the world by design, that people are not perfect and they're not intended to be perfect. And when we actually achieve our tikkun, so to say, or what we're supposed to accomplish, you can't see, I'll just stand as long as I can, then I'll sit, try to accomplish in this world, we go back up there. Like when our neshama's job is finished on this world, it attained whatever level of perfectionism is supposed to have, then we leave. Perfectionism is for Hashem and for the malachim. And human beings say salach lanu every single day because we make mistakes and we do things that are wrong every single day. Not intentionally most of the time, but we are not expected to achieve perfectionism in any area of life on this world. Olam Hazeh is an imperfect place, and it's intended to be that way. And so, yes, different personalities struggle with perfectionism or with achievement. And just to mirror off something that Aviva said, when you had to make yontif in 24 hours and you called a rav and you found out exactly what you have to do, I have a secret to tell you. Some of those things apply when you are not making yontif in 24 hours. It applies to everyone who's making yontif.
I know, that was my point. Okay. It was mind-blowing. We waste so much time.
I grew up in a house of kirov. My father was a kirov rav for many years, and we had a lot of people go through our doors who didn't grow up religious or who currently weren't religious and were learning about religion. When you know less, you tend to be stricter. When you really find out halacha and what is expected of you, it's usually more lenient than you think. So you don't have to spring clean. It's certainly not the spring yet. You don't have to spring clean. And if you're a teacher, you have off in the summer, maybe you'll do your, quote, spring cleaning then. If you have a job or your kids are busy or this is a hectic time for you for other reasons, if you have a lot of yeshiva bachurim that come home now, you don't have to spring clean. That has nothing to do with religion, okay? So Pesach is about cleaning places of the house that likely have chametz and not crumbs, a certain size of chametz. I'm not going to do halacha now because I'm going to get in trouble from somebody, but just ask your rav, what exactly is the halacha? And look, even they give out those pamphlets, the Pesach, look, they write there. Things are much more lenient than we might think in many areas. And then things might be a little stringent and things that we didn't know. But the whole, like, scrub the house and empty every costume and clean out every... This is not halacha, okay? So find out what you actually have to do, and then your expectations will become much more regulated and feel much more manageable. And then we'll start off the whole, or we'll continue the whole holiday season with our stress thermometer much, much lower. Now, if you're the type of person that likes to spring clean when it's Pesach season, that's your choice. But A, don't impose that on your family because it's not for Pesach. And B, don't complain about it. You're doing it by choice. This is not what Hashem asked. Okay? So if we're cleaning for Pesach, just know what you have to do and then focus your energy on what Hashem wants from you more than just what your neighbor said, what your friend said, what your cousin said. You know, they're Pesach since Hanukkah. You know, don't talk to these people. Just never mind. They have a lot of stress then. It's not usually real life. I also, piggybacking off of what was said before, when we talk about our kids and including our kids and using Yontif as a time to bond, growing up nowadays, as we all know, some of us see it up close more than others, is really, really hard. Okay? My 15-year-old son said to me 2 weeks ago, Ma, how am I going to raise kids in this world? See, my 15-year-old son. You know what I said to him? I said the same thing to my father when I was your age. I did. And here we are. I said, I hope by the time you are raising kids, Mashiach will be here. That's what I told him. Okay? But it's a hard world to grow up in. And I think if we even, you know, I see spirituality and emotional health as very interconnected. So nowadays, and I see some of the questions that came in, I was just skimming them, you know, how do we bring ruchnius into yontif? Spirituality doesn't necessarily mean that you're learning from a sefer, or even that you're saying long tefillos. Spirituality, I think nowadays, means healthy emotionality. That when kids feel, and when we feel, and when we with our husband feel positive and eager to be with everyone and appreciating the quality time and getting a kick out of the different personalities of our children and the differences between us and our spouse and how that shows up when we spend a lot of time together and we learn to laugh and lighten the mood and make our children feel positive about the contributions that they bring. This is spirituality. especially as a mother. Our primary role is to be a wife, and if we're zochet to have children, then a mother as well. And so to nurture our children and to be a supportive and positive spouse, that's our ruchnius. That's our spirituality. So how do we act spiritual on Pesach? Being in a good mood. That's being spiritual. Okay, because that's how we're elevating the atmosphere in our home and making our kids feel, again, what does it mean proud to be a Jew? Like, I don't even know what that means nowadays. I don't even know what the word pride means, a million things. What does it mean proud to be a Jew? It's that they should feel that their house is a happy, positive place where they feel special. That's what keeps kids happy. That's what keeps kids feeling valuable. That's what keeps kids prioritized and doing things that, making choices that are hopefully healthy and correct for them. When they feel that their home is a place where they are valued, they're appreciated, it's positive, and they feel special. And we do create a lot of the atmosphere in our home. We're not the only ones who create the atmosphere in our home, but I think we're the main character. Okay? So we don't have to take all the responsibility, but we do play a big role in the atmosphere in our home. And when we bring a positive, focused, you know, it doesn't mean you have to be smiling and dancing in your kitchen all the time. I certainly don't do that. But just that there's a feeling of, like, I'm happy you're here. You know, your kid walks into the room, hi, Chaim. Like, they just feel good that they're there. And they feel like you're happy that they're there, especially kids who aren't always home. This creates a lot of emotional security, which hopefully translates into a spiritual connection to the values of the home. Now, yes, going into the cognitive mind, I'm going to get a little really practical now, and that's what I was asked to do. And some of you have heard in the parenting classes that I give here, some of you have heard little snippets of these concepts. So as Aviva said here also, everybody's different, and we all apply things in a different way. So I'm just going to share some general suggestions, and then, of course, take it or leave it according to what works for you. It is generally true that when you have, you know, a big task ahead of you, when you have some pathway forward, you feel calmer. So nowadays we have, you know, Waze and everything, but those of us who are old enough to remember life before Waze, I mean before GPSs, I'm older than I look. Yeah. So then we, even before MapQuest.
I just had a map, and you would look at the map.
When I was dating my husband, he had a big map.
Dora had a map.
You might know more or less where you're going, but if someone gives you directions in those days, if you had directions and you had directions written down, then even if on the way you ended up taking a shortcut or you skipped a light, but you knew basically where you were going, you were a more confident driver. You were calmer on your way. So I think we could look at Pesach that way. So those who are making Yontif for the first time, if you're not, I saw some of the questions came also, if you're not making Yontif, it's also a task to pack everything up and make sure everyone has what they need and to organize cleaning your house to the extent that you are halachically told you have to if you're leaving town or leaving your home, and then packing up the family in a way that would be practical to wherever you're going. That's also a task. It's not the same as making Pesach, but it's still a lot of responsibilities. If we have some form of like directions or roadmap, even if we don't follow it exactly, I think it gives a sense of calm and potential confidence to the mother. So I'm going to suggest a kind of a roadmap. And again, take it or leave it, or take whichever parts feel right to you. So here goes real cognitive executive function organization skills, okay? Here we go. Okay. So we have, should I say how many weeks till Pesach?
No. Yes, we're so excited. It's coming. Yay!
I think it's 2.5 weeks. So, great. That's the perfect time to get started. So, I suggest that we make a list, and I'm being very specific now. Make a list. There's basically three categories, and then the fourth if you're leaving town. There's cleaning, there's shopping, and there's cooking. If you're leaving town, then some people who go away for Yontif are still doing some cleaning and some shopping and some cooking. Some people bring food with them, so take it or leave it. But parentheses fourth is packing, if you're packing for Yontif, okay? So, cleaning, shopping, cooking. Now, go into the subcategories. Cleaning. I'm serious. For those of you, this makes sense to you and you're comfortable with this. You sit down with a paper and pen or do it on your phone or on your computer, whatever works.
and make a list of the things that you are told you have to halachically clean. So let's say it's this room and this room and this closet, right? Make a list. Shopping. What does shopping include? So there's clothing shopping, there's socks or accessories, maybe there's shoes, and then there's maybe there's the fruit store, and then there's Jewel, and then whatever stores, okay? And then when we talk about cooking, so that's its own, again, if you're making yontif and you're doing a lot of cooking, so then again, are you eating out any of the meals? So then knock that off. Are you hosting for meals? So then those are bigger meals. That part's going to include a little more detail, which I'll come back to in a minute, okay? So I'm going to put cooking just in its own vague category right now. Now, we have 2.5 weeks. Take your calendar and look ahead at the next 2.5 weeks. And mark off blocks of time that you know you'll have time to get stuff done without people under your feet or without other responsibilities, a time that you're not working, that your kids are not around, or if they're around, there's a babysitter or cleaning help or whatever it is. So let's say 9 to 12 in the morning on Monday and Wednesday, you have time. Okay, maybe at night, if you have younger children, they go to sleep, so maybe you have 8 to 10 at night. Maybe you have older children who are up then, but that's okay for you to be busy. Look at your 2.5 weeks and mark off blocks of time that are times to accomplish things for Yontif. Now go back to your itemized list. Approximate, and again, I'm getting very detailed here, take it or leave it, approximate how long each thing takes. Okay, doing the, you know, whatever, the dining room. How long might that take? Roughly estimate. How long will that closet, the pantry, take? How long will that bedroom that the kid always brings foods into take? Whatever it is. Shopping. How long does it take? How long does it take you to go to blank, blank store and buy blank, blank items, whatever it is? How long does it take to go shopping in Jewel that I could say I think everyone goes there before Yontif? It depends what time of day it is. Depends on the day of the week. It's a long trip, right? Look, estimate time, okay? When it comes to cooking, again, it just that's much more detail. So we just need chunks of time for that. Usually, you know, an hour could give you a lot of stuff. 2 hours, depends on how quick you are. Now match it up. Go back to your calendar. Okay, 9 to 12 Monday and Wednesday. Do I want to spend that time cooking, cleaning, or shopping? Do you have a cleaning lady that day? Maybe you can work together with her and get a whole bunch of stuff done. Would you rather use that day to go out? I find what a lot of people do is when they have so many tasks, they end up doing a little bit of everything and then you don't feel like you did anything. So from 9 to 12 is, let's say, downtime for somebody in the morning. Like, okay, I'm going to run to Jewel, and then when I come home, I'm going to quickly do the closet, and then you don't really unpack the groceries. You don't really put the stuff away. The closet isn't finished when the kids come home. There's an expression in Hebrew, tafasta meruba lo tafasta. If you try to grab too much, you didn't really get anything. So it's better, I suggest, to be methodical and to stay focused in a block of time on one category. So maybe you just, you know, do the food shopping all then and calculate time to unpack and put everything away. You didn't do any cleaning that day. That was your cooking day. And then another day might be, this is my home day. I'm spending the day cleaning. And you're not doing any errands that day. When your daughter says, when am I getting out of clothes? You're going to say, oh, that's on Sunday from 2 to 4 p.m. That's when we're taking you out. So in whatever way works for you, my suggestion here is that we consolidate for ourselves what has to be done in categories and then match up those tasks with time that we know is likely to be available. Does Hashem have things in store and one kid could be homesick on the day that we're supposed to go out? We don't have a babysitter? Yes. So then you go back to your plan and you swap the days. Oh, I'm home today, so I'm going to swap out the cleaning for today and I'll do the shopping hopefully on another day. And then if you're packing because you're leaving, so then again, if you have to clean a little bit and if you have to cook a little, calculate it. How long does it take for you to pack? Packing takes shorter when you have all the stuff in the house that you need, right? When you start packing, like, oh my gosh, this kid has no socks. So make an hour that you're going to go through the wardrobe. Don't have to go to the store and buy everything new. See what still fits, see what you still have, and then fill in the blanks. Okay, now let me just share a couple of general tips. We spoke a lot about children. You know, it depends on the ages of your children. Children can help from a very young age. They help when something cool happens when they help. Okay? We all work for incentives. Don't be so altruistic. No one here does anything for no benefit. Okay? We all work in, whether working at home or working out of the home or working, we gain something from it. Okay? You might enjoy your work, But you gain something from it. No one's just like l'shem shamayim, you know, just doing X, Y, Z. So kids are the same. Kids as young as 4 and 5 can help. If they, when they're that young, sometimes the prize that they get is the good feeling that they have of spending the time with mommy or with daddy or whoever it is, or just feeling very big and special, maybe getting to stand on a high stool and use the type of, you know, utensils in the kitchen they never had a chance to use before. Maybe they get a lot of positive recognition, right? Do you know who helped to make the potato kugel? Chayla peeled all the potatoes, you say about your 6-year-old. 6-year-olds can peel, okay? Don't be overprotective. Just stay near them. Don't treat kids like glass jars, okay? They could do stuff. This Sunday, 2 days ago, I had my 7-year-old daughter home. No one else was home, I have like an oven in my basement, like not a real Pesach kitchen, a pretend one, and I wanted to start doing some cooking. And she saw I was setting stuff up, and she says, "Oh, what are you doing cooking?" I said, "Do you want to help?" And she said, "Yeah." We cooked for 4 hours. I was shocked at what she was able to do, and I didn't realize I should have had her help earlier. And then I told her all the things we made. You know, she was just mixing sauces to pour over the meat. And she peeled carrots. She put them in the food processor. I took a picture of her. I said, "I'm sending this to Bubby." You know, I sent it to my married daughter. Like, look who's helping me. You know what I mean? She's like $1 million. She said to me at the end of the day, "That was so fun. Can we do it again?" Yes, next Sunday. Okay. And then, you know, again, depending on the personality of the kid, girls are sometimes expected to help more in the kitchen. You know, sometimes there are boys who like helping in the kitchen, and girls who don't like it. There are some girls who just learned how to drive, for example, who will say, "Mom, give me all the errands. I don't want to make potato kugel, but I'll do all the errands." Load her up, okay? And maybe send a younger kid with her so that, you know, be smart. Yeah, give kids jobs that they like. Give kids jobs that suit their personality. If you have the luxury of splitting up jobs between children, not everyone has that based on age, gender, and number of children, but if you do, you want the kids to feel good. I like, in general, being proactive. Those of you that know my work, you're laughing. Proactive planning, better than reactive responses. So before already, guys, this Yontif, for whatever the reasons are, or just because it's Yontif, we're going to all chip in together and, you know, give incentives. I did this last year. I have, you know, older and younger kids. I said, we get this kitchen turned over for Pesach on this and this day. We're all going to go out to eat. And we don't go out to eat as a family very often because my kids don't all live at home. So that was a very big treat for everyone, and everyone chipped in. Sometimes I find food to be a good incentive. Sometimes I'll say to two of the kids, I need this job done. I need it done in an hour. You finish it, you can go to Hamachi and pick up sushi for yourselves. Eat it in the car so no one else has to see, and then clean the car for Pesach. Okay? But, like, you know, be smart. Like, don't expect them to be so holy that they're just l'shem shamayim cleaning for Pesach. You're not doing that either. Okay? So, and I'm a big fan of adult incentives. Give yourself incentives too. Tell yourself, if I get this stuff knocked off the list, then I will buy supper tonight and not make supper, or I will give myself an hour to just go into my room and call my friend without no guilt and tell everyone that I'm not available, or I will go to that exercise class, and whatever it is, whatever suits you, but give yourself incentives too. We all work for incentives. I always like to buy new music for Pesach cooking. I buy a new cookbook and new music. I also like new recipes. I just find this exciting. If you have older kids, or older means 10 even, let them look at the cookbooks. Let the boys look at the cookbooks. Tell me one or two things that look like good desserts for you, and I'll see if I can make it. And then when they said it, say, "You know what? You could probably help me make that. Come on." Boys could cook, and girls could clean. some other little tips here. If you have a grill outdoors, that's a real good supper idea for those last few days when you're like in between. Grilling, you know, they could eat it with chametz or not, but it's outside, it's not in your kitchen. Hopefully the weather will get nice. Kids could flip burgers when they're 11 years old, okay? So that's just an idea. Okay, we all need downtime, us and our kids. So those kids who get tired after 5 minutes, I just had a woman speaking to me now. Her oldest is a boy. He's 15, and he's like lying on the couch. And the second he comes home from yeshiva, like he's too tired to do anything. So I told her, just give him a task that's very concise and time manageable. And tell him, I know you like to relax, and you could. This job has to be done by 12. After that, you can take the afternoon or whatever it is. But also for ourselves, we're allowed to say, you know, I'm taking this hour to chill. And yeah, the kitchen might get messy. And no, I don't have anything for you to eat right now. I'm taking an hour of downtime. Maybe you're going to take a walk. Maybe you'll take a drive. Maybe you'll just go rest a little bit. But we're allowed to take that downtime too. If you have boys in yeshiva, they think that Bein Hazmanim is a holiday before the holiday starts. Anyone have that? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So they think that from the time they come home, they're on holiday, and they come home very early.
And hungry.
And of course, that's part of the holiday. So yeah, be proactive. Think about it before. Have certain stuff in the house that you know they'll like. Tell them what your limits are. I don't mind if you do this, but no, we're not starting to make recipes at midnight. That's when the house starts crying. You want to stay up? Yeah, but not in the kitchen. Or whatever your rules are. Let them know before. I have found that over the years, sometimes it's good to give incentives. Like I said, this example of going out to eat. Last year, I needed my big boys to help with stuff, and I told them, if these and these jobs get done by these and these days, then we're going to take you on a chalmai trip that's expensive that we normally wouldn't go on. They have a place they like to go to that I think is ridiculously expensive, but I use it as an incentive. Like, come on, let's all chip in, and you'll earn that trip. And that's something that also sometimes works. Back to the cooking. So when you're going to make your menus and recipes, which I'm not going to get into all the details, I don't think that's for now, but make menus for Cholamayit. Don't assume that everyone's just going to eat matzah and cream cheese 3 times a day for 4 days. They won't. Okay? So make a menu. Like the same way you make menus for Yom Tov, plan what you're having every night of Cholamayit, and if you're going out on a trip or something, prepare it before so you have all that done already. And then depending on your family setup, maybe even plan what you're doing for lunch. And this way it's not like, what should we eat? We're hungry. Like that whole like pawing around the kitchen doesn't happen if you're like, okay, today we have, you know, the salad and this tuna and this whatever it is and these, you know, Pesach blintzes or whatever it is. And it's there and it's ready. Also meal plan for Erev Yom Tov. Okay, the Friday afternoon at Erev Yom Tov, serve food. Put out schnitzel and sweet potato fries and cut up fruit. Give them a meal at 4 o'clock on Friday afternoon. Because the meal's late at night, and the Seder's even later. And then again, they come before they leave to shul, like, what could we eat? You're like, get out of the kitchen!
I'm going to tell you this. We do a really weird thing that's a family heritage. It's been passed on. It's actually very delicious. It's bologna and potatoes and tomato juice. It's bologna from Romanian. Make sure it's Romanian bologna. Small potatoes, you stick it in tomato juice, you boil it, and it simmers all day. It's delicious, very filling, and the kids eat it all day.
Fantastic.
It's a really weird sounding thing, but it's delicious.
Fantastic. And depending on the setup of your kitchen or whatever it is, well, you put them in this section or that section. And okay, fantastic. Also, write down tips for yourself for the next year. I was just looking at my notes to myself from last year. Don't use masking tape in areas that get wet. Buy waterproof duct tape. Okay, these types of things, like, you know, if you have more than one car, and cars also have to be, you know, part of Bedikas Chametz. Depending on the size of your house, Bedikas Chametz could take a long time. Halachically, you're allowed to start Bedikas Chametz the night before the official Bedikas Chametz, by the way. Ask your rabbi, but yeah. And so just, you know, write these things down for yourself that can be helpful for the next year. Just a cute tip that I once read somewhere. If you cook ahead and you're freezing things, so first of all, and this is talking about simplifying, for Yom Tov, I don't use any real pans. Zero. Every single thing is disposables. The meal's over. We have one big garbage bag that goes out, and I sit down. There's no washing. There's no dishes. Disposable. And if you're freezing things, label all the pans on the side. So then you stack everything, and you see everything, and take a picture and send it to your mom to be proud of all your cooking. Don't show your friends. Those make them jealous. And one tip also that I just discovered myself about Sukkot this year is that sometimes, like, you'll make a meat, but your family's not, like, your family's not big enough to eat a whole meat, and then you keep, like, rewarming it and trying to, like, get everyone to eat it by the next meal, and it's like, oh, it's that meat again. So you can make a meat and then freeze it in small pans. It sounds so obvious, but I only realized that this year. So we just like small, you know, freezing the small portions, and you can have more variety, but you don't keep like trying to like serve the same thing that never got used up by the last meal. And so that's sometimes a tip. Okay, I see that some of the questions that came in, I think we all touched on. I'm going to sit down and let's hear someone else's voice. I just want to end by saying, remember that Hashem loves you. Okay, he said, Derechecha Darchei Noam. The ways of Hashem are supposed to be pleasant. Hashem loves you. He wants you to serve Him from a place of happiness. He wants us to enjoy the blessings of the children that we have. He wants us to feel happy and calm and grateful. And sometimes I tell this to myself when something's starting to feel like just, you know, a little too tough. I just remind myself, Hashem loves me. So whatever I'm doing, like, He's smiling. Like, He's smiling. Hashem loves us. We try our best. Hatzlacha to everyone, and thank you for listening.